was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their backs confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string.
Welcome to Resurrect the Republic RTR Truth Radio broadcast on RBN Network. I'm your host, Lori Anderson, along with host John O. How are you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing great. How are you, Lori?
I'm doing well. Blessed. And we have a lot of interesting topics to cover this evening, do we not?
There's a lot of interesting things going on.
There truly is, and I hope we'll have time to cover them all. If not, y'all will have to come back and join us tomorrow night to hear the rest of the interesting information. We want to welcome also all of our new listeners. Thank you for joining us. And Jason, thank you for sending new listeners our way as well. The first topic that I want to cover is about Syria. You know, antique MSM, they tend to do their fake news, and they tend to refuse to report on the other side of the picture. And we here on RTR Truth Radio broadcast do our very best to try to get out both sides of the story so that you can also think for yourselves. And we also try to get you to think in a manner that how would you feel if this was going on right here in your yard, how would you feel about it? So I wanted to first cover Tim Brown of Freedom Outpost on November 30th covered this topic. And, of course, Antique MSM is silent about it. But the House quietly passed a possible no-fly zone over Syria. He stated in his article, earlier this month, just after the elections, the House of Representatives quietly met to pass a resolution that seeks to assess the effectiveness and establishment of a no-fly zone in Syria, setting up what would be considered a possible act of aggression and possibly provoking a war with Russia. And, of course, as you well know, antique media is silent. The bill number is H.R. 5732. It is cited as the Caesar Syria Civilian Protection Act of 2016, and it was sponsored,
like that,
of
name.
Course. Right. Like that wouldn't jump
Caesar,
out at
you. Caesar,
yeah,
you know. Yeah. I wonder who the Caesar is in this.
Well, of course, it was sponsored by Representative Elliot Engel, Democrat of New York, and most people know who he is. He's been quite in a few bit of conflicts himself. And 89 other co-sponsors, both Republicans and Democrats. Resolution included in Section 303 is titled the Assessment of Potential Effectiveness and of Requirements for the Establishment of Safe Zones or a No-Fly Zone in Syria. This is extremely important that all of you listen to this. We need to raise some cane, and we need to make sure that this has not gotten all the way through. This is an act of aggression. It is an act of war. Now, let's flip that on the other side really quick, because we're going to let Assad speak for himself. Too many people have not heard Assad's side, and I feel like it is important that they do. However, you can go to Freedom Outpost. and read the rest of the article. You absolutely need to read this. The title of the article is Media Silent as House Quietly Passes Possible No-Fly Zone Over Syria, written by Tim Brown on November 30th, 2016. Phenomenal individual and writer, true patriot. So what do we need to know? Let's flip this for a minute. Let's say here within the United States of America, we started having attacks by the ISIS and the terrorists, and we started fighting against those terrorists to protect our homeland. And our U.S. military was flying over our land and having to try to annihilate these terrorists. That is as if Russia were to tell us, well, I'm sorry, we're going to establish a no-fly zone and the U.S. military is not going to be able to fly over U.S. land. That's exactly what, if you don't realize the depth of that, that is the truth. That is what's going on in Syria. That is what the no-fly zone, they're trying to tell Syria, the Syrian people, the Syrian Air Force, that they're not allowed to fly over their own land. So we need to understand the gravity of that situation. We can't do
that. Exactly, and that's why I commented on the Caesar title.
Right.
You know, we're acting empirical over somebody else's sovereign nation.
Right.
And
who are
I read? Yeah, I read this bill, and I'm sure you have too, Laurie. But what just is so disturbing is how utter the hypocrisy of the way these people think and behave, and you know, it's just the outright lies that are, you know, propagated in this bill. This is just completely, utterly, you know, false. It's just there's little to no actual truth in this.
Well, even, you know, I would think that even in the people who have been propagandized, I would think that they could see the dripping hypocrisy in this, and that in reality you don't have the authority. That's like someone coming into your house and saying, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to have a dog in your house. Why? Because I said you're not. And who are you? You know?
Yeah.
So in Portuguese TV, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad had an interview with RTP, and it's showing that it was November the 15th, 2016. I want people to understand the no-fly zones are not protecting civilians. They are protecting the terrorists. The civilians that are caught up in Aleppo, where the terrorists are, there's been a lot of civilians that actually have, and this has been reported from people who are on the ground that are not the white hats, by the way, that are true reporters finding out what's going on. The civilians have been going to Bashar al-Assad for protection, but there's a lot of them that are not. And the ones that are not, it is because their family members, they will not only be killed, but they're scared that these terrorists that have control where those civilians are going to kill their family if they leave. So you need to understand those civilians are not what's being targeted by Assad and Russia. So if we could, we're going to go ahead and we're going to let President Assad speak for himself, which is something you definitely won't ever hear from antique mainstream media. Mike, would you please go ahead and play clip LV1?
Mr. President, let's start with Aleppo, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
There are still thousands of civilian trapped, trying to survive in a sort of subhuman conditions in the middle of a deluge of bombs. Why do you think that they refused to get out?
The part that you mentioned in Aleppo, what they call it, the eastern part, is occupied by the terrorists for the last 3 years. And they have been using the civilians as a human shields. From our side, from our part as government, we have two missions. The first one is to fight those terrorists, to liberate that area and the civilians from those terrorists. At the same time, to try to find a solution to evacuate that area from those terrorists if they accept, let's say, what they call reconciliation option, in which they either give up their armaments for amnesty, or they leave that area. The other thing we did as government is to open gates for the civilians to leave that area, and at the same time for the humanitarian convoys and help to go through those gates inside that part of Aleppo. But the terrorists publicly refused any solution, so they wanted to keep the situation as it is.
But Mr. President, aren't you using the jihadists to discredit all the oppositions at the eyes of the national and international public opinion, and in the end to try to wipe them all out?
No, we cannot do that for a very simple reason, because we've been dealing with this kind of terrorism since the 50s, since the Muslim Brotherhood came to Syria at that time, and we learned that lesson very well, especially in the 80s, that terrorists cannot be used as a political card. You cannot put it in your pocket, because it's like scorpion, it will bite you someday. So we cannot use jihadists, because it's like shooting yourself in the foot. They're going to be against you sooner or later. This is in pragmatic way, but if you think as value, we wouldn't do it. Using terrorism or jihadists or extremists for any political agenda is immoral.
But Mr. President, the people, the civilians inside Aleppo, couldn't we assume that they probably don't trust the government, they don't trust the army, that they just want democracy, dignity, freedom. Can you give that to them?
Let's talk about it, about this point regarding the reality. Since the beginning of the crisis, since the terrorists started to control some areas within Syria, the majority of the Syrian civilians left that areas to join the government areas, not vice versa. If the majority of the Syrians don't want the government, they should go the other way. Let me tell you another example, which is a starker example. You were in Daraya, in Madami, a few days ago when you came here. The terrorists and militants who left that area to Idlib, in the northern part of Syria, to join their fellow terrorists, they left their families under the supervision of the government, and you can go and visit them now, if you want.
Mr. President, I've been here in 2000, 4 years ago, and now, are you winning the war, this war in Syria?
We can say you can win the war only when you restore stability in Syria. You cannot talk about winning the war as long as there's killing and destruction on a daily basis. That doesn't mean we are losing the war. The army is making good advancement on a daily basis against the terrorists. Of course, they still have the support of Turkey and Qatar and Saudi Arabia and some Western countries, including the United States. But the only option that we have in that regard is to win. If you don't win and the terrorists win, Syria wouldn't exist anymore.
But would you have done that also without Hezbollah, Iran and Russia?
They are here because they could offer very essential and important help. Because the situation that we are facing now is not only about a few terrorists from within Syria. It's like international war against Syria. Those terrorists have been supported by tens of foreign countries. So Syria alone wouldn't be able to face this kind of war without the help of its friends. That's why their existence and their support was very essential.
Is it Mr. Putin your most important ally?
Russia is very important. Iran is very important. Hezbollah is very important. All of them are important. Each one made important achievements against the terrorists in Syria. So it's difficult to say who's more important than the other.
But what's the role of Russia in Syria nowadays?
The most important part of their support is the aerial support, which is very essential. They have very strong firepower. And at the same time, they are the main supply of our army for more than 60 years. So our army depends on the Russian support in different military domains.
But are you free to decide the future of Syria, or are you dependent on the Vladimir Putin strategies?
No, first of all, we are fully free, not partially, fully free in everything related to the future of Syria. Second, which is more important, or as important as the first part or the first factor, that the Russians always base their policies on values. And these values are the sovereignty of other countries, the international law, respecting other people, other cultures. So they don't interfere in whatever related to the future of Syria or the Syrian people.
But they have helped you quite a few times in the United Nations. They have vetoed a few resolutions condemning your government, the Syrian army. There are several reports pointing Syria for use of chemical weapons, human rights abuses, war crimes, all of this in the framework of the United Nations.
And many ask, what for? I mean, what's in return? What did they ask in return? That the question, actually, that the content of your question, because we heard it many times, whether in the media or directly. Actually, first of all, for the values, because in these values that I'm talking about, the value of international law, they have their interests as well. I mean, fighting the terrorists in Syria, it's not only in the interest of Syria or the Syrian people, it's the interest of the Middle East, of Europe itself, something that many officials in the West don't see or don't realize or don't acknowledge. And in the interest of the Russian people, because they have been facing terrorists for decades now. So the Russians are fighting for us, for the world, and for themselves.
But when you speak about values, democracy is a value.
Of course.
Freedom is a value.
Of course.
Can you say that Syria is a democracy, like the Western standards?
The only one who can fight for these values, like democracy and freedoms, are the people of any country or any society, not the foreigners. Foreigners cannot bring freedom, cannot bring democracy, because this is related to the culture, to the different factors that affect or influence that society. You cannot bring it, you cannot import it, you cannot import anything from outside your country regarding the future of your country.
But would you define Syria as a democracy?
No, we were on the way to democracy. We didn't say that we are fully democratic. We were on the way, we are moving forward slowly or fast. That's subjective, cannot be objective, that's always subjective, but we're moving forward in that regard, of course. But the criteria or the paradigm for us is not the Western paradigm, because the West has its own culture, we have our own culture, they have their own reality, we have our own reality. So our democracy should reflect our culture and our habits and our custom and our reality at the same time.
I'm sure that you know that there is a new Secretary General of the United Nations. How do you look at him, Mr. Guterres, taking into the account his well-known humanitarian approach to the situation?
Of course, I agree about the headline of this approach. I say headline because you always, under the headline, you have many sub-headlines or different titles. When you talk about humanitarian, it doesn't only mean to offer the people the help, the food, the necessary needs for their lives. The first thing, if you ask the Syrian refugees, for example, the first thing they want is to go back to their country. The first thing they want is to be able to live within Syria. That means help, humanitarian help, the way we understand it, food, medical care, any other, let's say, basics for the daily life. The second one is to have stability and to have security, which means humanitarian equal fighting terrorists. You cannot talk about humanitarian aid and supporting the terrorists at the same time. You cannot. You have to choose. And of course, I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the country that are going to support his plan, because he needs the support of other countries. He cannot achieve that plan while many countries in the world still supporting the terrorists in Syria. So of course we support it, whether helping the people to leave, to go back to their country, and to live in security without terrorists.
He said already that peace in Syria is a priority.
Yeah.
Are you available to talk with him, to work with him for that purpose?
Definitely, of course. It's his priority. It's our priority. That's self-evident. It's not only our priority, it's a Middle Eastern priority. And when the Middle East is stable, the rest of the world is stable, because Middle East is the heart of the world, geographically and geopolitically. And Syria at the heart of the Middle East, geographically and geopolitically. We are the fault line. If you don't deal with this fault line, you're going to have earthquake. That's what we always say. That's why this priority is 100% correct from our point of view, and we are ready to cooperate in any way to achieve stability in Syria, of course taking into consideration the interests of the country and the will of the Syrian people.
You said when we spoke that the United Nations are biased. You think with Mr. Guterres that can change a little bit?
Everybody knows that the United Nations is not the Secretary General. He has an important position, but the United Nations is the states within this organization. And to be frank, most of the people say only the 5 permanent members. This is the United Nations. Because they have the veto. They can do whatever they want and they can refuse whatever they want. And if there's a reform that very much needed for this organization, they can make veto or they can move forward in that regard. But at the same time, the way he presented himself as Secretary General is very important. If you ask me, what do you expect from such a new official in that important position, I would say I need two things. The first one is to be objective in every statement he could make regarding any conflict regarding around the world, including Syria. The second one, which is related and complementary with the first one, is not to turn his office into a part or branch of the State Department of the United States. That's what we expect now. Of course, when he's objective, he can play important role in dealing with different officials in the United Nations in order to bring the policies of the different states, mainly Russia and the United States, toward more cooperation and more stability regarding Syria.
But regarding Syria, there are a lot of agendas, Qatar, Turkey, Russia, United States, Iran, Saudi Arabia. How is it possible to try to find a peace process with so many agendas?
Without bringing all those countries and the different factors in one direction, of course, going to be difficult. That's why I always say the Syrian problem, as isolated case, as Syrian case, is not very complicated. What makes it complicated, the interference from the outside, especially the Western interference, because it's against the will of the Syrian government, while the intervention of the Russian, Iranian and Hezbollah is because of the invitation of the Syrian government. So his role as Secretary General in bringing all these powers together is very essential, and we hope he can succeed. It's not easy, of course.
Let me pick out Turkey. Their army is in your country. Their president said last week that their interests lays beyond their natural borders. He referred Mosul and Aleppo. Do you accept this?
Of course not. You're talking about a sick person. He's megalomaniac, president. He's not stable. He lives during the Ottoman era. He doesn't live in the current time. He's out of touch with the reality.
But how are you going to do with their army inside your country?
It's our right to defend. It's invasion. It's our right to defend our country against any kind of invasion. But let's be realistic. Every terrorist came to Syria, he came through Turkey with the support of Erdogan. So fighting those terrorists is like fighting the army of Erdogan. Not the Turkish army, the army of Erdogan.
But it's a NATO country, are you aware of that?
Yeah, of course, whether it's a NATO country or not, it doesn't have the right to invade any other country, according to the international law or to any other moral value.
Mr. President, America has a new elected president. What do you expect of Donald J. Trump?
We don't have a lot of expectations because the American administration is not only about the president. It's about different powers within this administration, the different lobby that they're going to influence any president. So we have to wait and see when he embarks a new mission, let's say, or position within this administration as president in 2 months' time. But we always say we have wishful thinking that the United States would be unbiased, respect the international law, doesn't interfere in other different countries around the world. And, of course, stop supporting terrorists in Syria.
But he said in an interview that he seems to be ready to work with you in the fight against the Islamic State or ISIL. Are you ready for such a move?
Of course, I would say this is promising, but can he deliver? Can he go in that regard? What about the countervailing forces within the administration, the media, the mainstream media that were against him? How can he deal with it? That's why for us it's still dubious whether he can do or live up to his promises or not. That's why we are very cautious in judging him, especially as he wasn't in a political position before. So we cannot tell anything about what he's going to do. But if, let's say if, if he's going to fight the terrorists, of course we're going to be ally, natural ally in that regard, with the Russians, with the Iranian, with many other countries who wanted to defeat the terrorists.
So you will cooperate to the Americans in the fight against the...
Of course, definitely. If they are genuine, they have the will, and if they have the ability, of course, we are the first one to fight the terrorists, because we suffered more than any other one in this world from terrorists.
So cooperate with the Americans that are now supporting the Kurds, the IPG, that try to get into Raqqa?
When you talk about cooperation, it means cooperation between two legal governments, not cooperation between a government or foreign government and any faction within Syria. Any cooperation that doesn't go through the Syrian government is not legal. If it's not legal, we cannot cooperate with, and we don't recognize and we don't accept.
Anyway, the vice president, Mr. Pence, said that he has admitted the use of military force to prevent your military force from a humanitarian crisis in Aleppo. How do you look at it?
This is against the international law again. And that's the problem with the American position. They think that they are the police of the world. They think they are the judge of the world. They're not. They are a sovereign country. They are an independent country. But this is their limit. They don't have to interfere in any other country. Because of this interference, for the last 50 years, that's why they are very good only in creating problems, not in solving problems. That's the problem, the American role. That's why I said we don't pin a lot of hopes of changing administration. Because that context has been going on for more than 50 years now. And that's expected. If they want to continue in the same position of the United States creating problems around the world, that's what they have to do, only interfering in the matters of other nations.
But returning to what the president, newly elected American president, said about cooperating with your government in the fight against Islamic State, do you expect a change of also within the European countries?
Regarding fighting terrorism, we are ready to cooperate with anyone in this world, with no conditions. That's the crux of our policy, not today, not yesterday, for years, even before the war on Syria. We always said that. In the 80s, we asked for international coalition against terrorism, after the Muslim Brotherhood crisis in Syria, when they started killing, and of course they were defeated at that time. We ask for the same thing. So this is a long-term policy that we base our policy on for 4 years now.
One last question, Mr. President. I need really to ask you this, because after all these years, do you still reject any responsibility for what happened in your country?
No, I never rejected any responsibility, but that depends on the decision. When you talk about responsibility, you ask yourself what the decision that you take in order to deal with the crisis. Did the president order anyone to kill civilians? Did he order the destruction? Did he order supporting terrorism in his country? Of course not. My decision was, and the decision of the different institutions and the decision of the different officials in Syria, I'm on top of them.
And on that note, we'll be back right after a word from our sponsors.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com. Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Mother of the moon, which built my sails, rose the sea of years.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast on RBN Network. I'm your host, Lori Anderson, joined with Jono this evening, and we've been discussing Syria. We believe that people are innocent until proven guilty, but we also believe in getting out both sides of the story. So at the beginning of the broadcast, we were discussing H.R. 5732. And then if you have just joined us, please make sure that you go back and you re-listen to this broadcast because we let President Assad speak for himself. Now, before I go any further, John, with all the research we've done, everything that came out of President Assad's mouth was the truth, was it not?
Yeah, as I was going to offer that up, as a matter of fact, as I listened to that interview two or three times, and I think he's shooting fairly straight, you know? And I definitely think he's providing a lot more honest insight, as you know, than our global elitist and criminals operating here, you know, so.
Right. And yeah. The funny thing is, over and over again, I've played U.S. State Department clips, which actually back up what President Bashar al-Assad said. have caught them at their own game. So it can't be said that, oh, well, he's just making it up, and, oh, well, it's propaganda. But right. One of the things that go ahead.
Have you ever heard of Syrian Girl?
Yes, she's a phenomenal individual. And if you've never heard of Syrian Girl, she is someone to look up on YouTube, people. She is actually she is the daughter of one of the previous leaders over Syria, and she no longer lives in Syria, but she is Syrian, and she exposes everything that is really, truly going on the ground. But if you notice also, you know, and this stems back to that Muslim Brotherhood thing that we were discussing just the other day. It's a Muslim Brotherhood issue, and people don't realize that. People keep going, well, Iran's helping them. Well, yeah, if you look at the mapping, if Iran doesn't help them, where do you think they're going next? That's why I played those clips of those individuals and the generals saying what they said, so people realize when you pull it up on the map, and let me tell you something, people, when you pull it up on the map and you see everybody who is against Syria, and you see how small Syria is, and you realize that they have not fallen yet, whether you like it or not, it has to be the hand of God on Syria, because Syria is tiny compared to these other nations that are helping. And you know, Turkey is in there unlawfully. The United States of America, the not our whole military is in there right now, but we do have individuals in there. Let's not sugarcoat it. We know they are. And they're in there unlawfully. You know, Russia was invited, Iran, Hezbollah, whether you like them or hate them is irrelevant. They are helping to fight the terrorists. Why? Because Hezbollah, you know, out of Iran, of course, they don't want them going over in there and killing their people, you know. So what you need to know about H.R. 5732, this was not a full Congress that did this, by the way.
Did you hear all that interference?
Yes, of course. Well, you know, we've got to be listening to
you. Did you hear all that interference?
No.
It's almost like somebody doesn't want us talking about this.
Oh, well, that's okay. I love them anyway, and we'll pray for them anyway. So, late in the day on November the 15th, 1 week after the U.S. elections, the lame duck Congress convened in a special session with normal rules suspended, so the House could pass House Resolution 5732, otherwise known as CSAR, Syria Civilian Protection Act, calling for the intensifying of the already harsh sanctions on Syria, assessing imposition of a no-fly zone inside of Syria to prevent the Syrian government from flying over their own land, and escalating efforts to press criminal charges against Syrian officials. So what you need to know, H.R. 5732 claims to promote a negotiated settlement in Syria, but as analyzed by Friends Committee for National Legislation, it imposes preconditions of which would actually make a peace agreement more difficult. There was 40 minutes of debate with six representatives: Ed Royce, Republican of California; Elliot Engel, Democrat of New York; Alina Rose Layton, Republican of Florida; Dan Kildee of Michigan, a Democrat; Chris Smith, Republican of New Jersey; Carlos Curbelo, Republican of Florida, all speaking in favor of the resolution. There were few other representatives present, but the House of Foreign Affairs Committee stated that the resolution was passed unanimously without mentioning the special conditions. So the most strikingly, the resolution calls for evaluating and developing plans for the United States to impose a no-fly zone inside of Syria, a sovereign nation, which is an act of war that would also violate international law as an act of aggression. It could also put the United States military in a position of shooting down Russian aircraft. And like I referenced before, to read the entire article about that no-fly zone, go ahead and look up on freedomoutpost.com, type in media silent as House quietly passes possible no-fly zone over Syria. It was written by Tim Brown, November 30th of 2016. He is a phenomenal individual, by the way. I just want to say that. So now at least you have both sides. You can take the time to decide, you know, what is the common sense factor there? And if you're against this bill that was snuck in, this was not done in a proper manner. This was snuck in, and that's why. Why did they sneak it in? Because probably it wouldn't have worked if everybody had been there. But the point of the matter is you now know about it. We are now reporting it to you. So now it is your job to check into it, check it, what I'm saying, research it, and then start making some phone calls and some emails and raising all sorts of cane, because it has already been seen twice, and we cannot let this go. We have to get on this immediately, or it could create a problem. I mean, I'm not even sure if Donald Trump is aware of what is going on when it comes to them doing that. I mean, it could be a type of situation where he doesn't know, and then they say, oh, well, you know, this passed, or whatever the case may be. What do you think, John?
Well, I think he is aware, actually. You know, one thing I wanted to point out, you know, because I brought up Syrian girl, and I learned from her and then followed up on my own research that Syria used to be the jewel of the mm-hmm. Middle East. It was mm-hmm. one of the very few Middle Eastern countries that had, you know, Muslims living peacefully next to Christians mm-hmm. and even Jews, and they were, you know, that was a Syria was a huge tourist destination for Europeans. You know, they had nice cities, good infrastructure. Right. You know, it was you know, really a nice country. I'm not saying necessarily from a political point of view, but there had been, you know, a stable political environment for that to exist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I never, prior to that, knew much about Assad, but, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm not going to try to say that I know how good or bad of a guy he necessarily was mm-hmm. prior, but, you know, I think he's just being made to be a massive scapegoat, and they even brought up in this bill the central banks, and I think the central banking and resources mm-hmm. and control and instigation of, you know, war, that's the reasons for all this. That's why NATO's doing this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all about that grab. Okay, so we have covered Syria. Now we're going to get to some other interesting news. There is so much to cover for everybody today. Wow, I don't even know where to begin with some of this, but I think what I'm going to do is I don't know how much you all have been paying attention to what's going on with EPA, or we all know it's an unlawful agency and they use EPA to push you in Agenda 21. We all know this through their rules and regulations. But I will say this, because I have several things that relate to the EPA situation. First of all, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play a clip. And this clip actually goes along with what I'm going to be covering, because I want to let you know that it is being reported, roll call reported this, that the GOP is ready to cut federal workforce under Trump, okay? And what it says is it's talking about, you know, for years the Republicans in Congress have been eyeing to overhaul the federal workforce. And it says one major plan is being ready by Representative Jason Chaffetz, the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. The Utah Republican calls it high on his agenda, which we are thankful for. And as we discussed last night, you know, he was made chairman again of the House and Oversight Committee, which we were very thankful for. He's interesting in making it easier to fire workers who perform badly and wants to reduce the federal civilian workforce, which currently numbers 2.1 million employees, not including the United States Postal Service. So you can find that information, because I'm going to go into further into other things that are connected with this. But the federal workforce, we all know it's completely out of control. It does need to be dialed back down, not only because of tax purposes, because that's how you get unlawful activities. That's how you get the waste in the funding. That's how you get what we were discussing last night at the Billionaires Club. With the fines and regulations and civil asset forfeiture, and all of that really, really goes together. So I wanted to go ahead, Mike, if you could please play clip LV4. And this just goes to show you, this is Representative Morgan Griffith. And he put this out on his YouTube. This is a small clip of it. And this is him speaking with the EPA about them regulating without any authority, and this time you're going to love what they're trying to regulate. If you would, go ahead and play that clip.
Thank you much, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you all being here today. Acting Administrator McCabe, my constituents tell me that the joint EPA-NHTSA rulemaking published in August imposes the compliance burden on the manufacturers of truck trailers to achieve reductions in greenhouse gases. Is that correct?
So you're speaking of the heavy-duty rule that we published this summer. And
yes, ma'am.
It does address a variety of aspects of trucks that can contribute to lower greenhouse gases, including trailers.
Okay. And so that brings my first question. The legal authority defines, that gives you all the right to do this on motor vehicles, defines motor vehicles to mean, and I'm going to read from 42 U.S.C. 7550, paragraph 2, the term motor vehicle means any self-propelled vehicle designed for transporting persons or property on a street or highway. So recognizing that trailers are not self-propelled, they are not a part of the heavy truck, they are added to the heavy truck after the manufacture of the heavy truck, from whence comes your legal authority to regulate trailers?
Well, Congressman, we lay out our response to those comments and our legal analysis at great length in the rule. But I will tell you that without a trailer, a truck is not transporting goods. And so we see the trailer as an integral part of the vehicle that is covered in the Clean Air Act.
And you and I are going to have these disagreements for years because we just see things differently, and I recognize that. But in all due respect, one of the principles of law, and I understand that you're not an attorney, and I'm not.
I am, actually.
Oh, you are an attorney. Okay. Well, there you go. One of the principles is, I was giving you credit. One of the principles is you go with the plain meaning of the words when Congress writes a statute. Motor vehicle means any self-propelled vehicle designed for transporting persons or property on a street or a highway. It would be my opinion, and I think based in well-settled law, that if you wanted to include trailers, you should have asked for an amendment to the code section as opposed to deciding on your own at the EPA, well, we see the truck can't be used without a trailer to haul goods, therefore we are going to make a determination. That's our job. I mean, respectfully, you're not elected by folks. That's our job to make that decision. And maybe it's the right decision. But it's something that we should have decided as opposed to the EPA just deciding to rewrite the words in the code section. And so I find it very difficult to rectify. And while you may have a very lengthy clarification on how you get to that point, the plain meaning of the words are motor vehicle means any self-propelled vehicle designed for transporting persons or property on a street or highway. Trailer doesn't do anything. Furthermore, the manufacturers of those trailers are not, in most cases, I don't know of any, but maybe there are some, they're not the truck manufacturers. So they are completely different entities across the board. And I'm not talking about wholly owned subsidiaries or anything like that. They're completely different companies. And so a person can go out and buy their truck from one of the manufacturers, and then they can go buy their trailer from any number of manufacturers. And so I'm having a hard time figuring out how y'all came to that conclusion. Furthermore, and for many of my colleagues who may not be aware of it, there's a Smart Way program where you all encourage folks to do things on trailers. And The smart way is currently voluntary, but appears from this new ruling that has come out that you all are making the smart way program mandatory. The problem that I have with that, acting secretary, is that helps on trucks that are going to be hauling across the highways, but it does not help in those situations where, which I'm told about half of the trucks that are out there hauling things are in local traffic, sometimes congested areas. These additional costs and extra weight added to the truck by the SmartWay program, which appears to now going to be basically mandatory, they don't give you any fuel efficiency for those trucks that are hauling things in a local setting. Now, if you're on the interstate highway, they clearly give you benefits, and the SmartWay program is beneficial to the truckers. What do you say to that? Why does it have to apply to every trailer that's sold out there when you've got a lot of folks who don't want to go that direction because it's not going to save them any fuel efficiency or give them any benefit?
Well, Congressman Griffiths, I'm not sure where you've concluded that the rule made the SmartWay program mandatory, because it certainly doesn't. The rule sets expectations and standards for a large range of different kinds of trucks, and it is very detailed and diverse based on the kinds of trucks. And we looked exactly at that question. You different standards are appropriate for vehicles that are on the highway operating at high speed most of the time, driving many, many miles, and other standards and other technologies are appropriate for vehicles that are used in urban settings and on smaller roads and stop and start and that sort of thing. So I think you'll find, and I think the manufacturers find, that we've been very responsive to exactly those sorts of things and have not made the SmartWay program mandatory.
Okay, that's not what I'm hearing. My time is up. I would say, though, that if you're talking about the averaging features, that didn't kick in for years, and a lot of the smaller manufacturers feel like they're going to have some real difficulties. With that, Mr. Chairman, because time is up, notwithstanding lots of other questions, I yield back.
Okay, so he was confronting them, of course, because they make rules, not law. And they're making him out of nowhere without the authority to do so. So the reason I brought up this topic is not because we're wondering if EPA is corrupt and spreading you in Agenda 21 everywhere that it possibly can. We know that. The news is President-elect Donald Trump is planning to nominate the Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, who is known for being an outspoken critic of the EPA, to lead the environmental agency, a senior transition source confirmed to Fox News. Now, according to this report, representing his state as Attorney General since 2011, Pruitt repeatedly sued the EPA to roll back environmental regulations and other health protections. He joined with other Republican attorneys generals in opposing the Clean Power Plan, which seeks to limit plant warming carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants. Pruitt also argued that curbing carbon emissions would trample the sovereignty of state governments, drive up electricity rates, threaten the reliability of the nation's power grid, and create economic havoc. So that's part of the new news. That one, that individual picked the title of that article. Of course, this was on December the 7th, today. And the title of that article is Trump to Nominate EPA Critic Pruitt to Lead Agency. So we're really glad to hear about that. And then, you know, I feel like since we are involved in this and we're talking about that good old UN Agenda 21, how about we talk about some weather? Are you getting scorched with that global warming that's going on over there, John?
No, yeah. It's about 15 degrees where I'm at. So, I can't believe how hot it is. We're just warming up as we go.
Right. Yeah. To say this is funny is to just ironic. But anyway, the Daily Mail was reporting, for everybody to get ready for a chill, the forecasters predict temperatures could fall 35 degrees below the average as polar plunge sweeps across the country. So, warning to everybody. Cold is expected to stick around the next week. near freezing and below temperatures forecast New York, Illinois, Ohio, Missouri, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Tennessee until Thursday. Cities to cop the cold in the next few days are those across the northern high plains in Nebraska, Colorado, Kansas, Texas, Wyoming, and other places will be as much as 35 degrees colder than average for this time of year. But, you know, that
is
according to the National Weather Service.
Yeah, I'm up in the Idaho Panhandle up near Coeur d'Alene, and so we're getting some.
You are getting hit pretty good then, aren't you?
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you can hear. Let me know if you're having trouble hearing me, because I'm having a lot of technical echoing reverberation. I can barely hear what you're saying, so I don't know if I'm coming through clear or not. So
you sound fine to me.
Okay,
I want to let everybody know also that AccuWeather reported the wintry spell could create headaches for travelers across parts of the East Coast. AccuWeather is expecting slippery and potentially snowy conditions on Interstate 80, I-81, and I-90. It is also expecting heavy snow in the next few days in the upper Mississippi Valley and across the Appalachians. So y'all try to keep yourselves warm and prepared. And if you are going to be on the road, always have some sort of an emergency kit with you in case you get to the point that you can't travel. You need to have some sort of emergency kit in your trunk to be able to help keep yourself warm. Even if you have also some snacks in there, you just never know. It's always better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So
that's really good advice. Really good advice, because that's happened to me before on, you know, being out in the middle of nowhere at night in deep cold and the car break down. So, and thankfully I did have an emergency supply bag and so I was okay. But a lot of people, they don't think about those things, and they hit the highway and, you know, could be stuck out there in the middle of the night or just even in the day with stranded with no help and deep cold.
Right.
That's not where you want to be, folks.
It's not. And a lot of people really don't think about that, because it's not something that, unless you're used to doing things like that, you don't really think about it. And it can save a life. You know, I always, if in my bag, I always also have a pocket knife in there, because you never know, some rope as well. You never know if you're going to need it. You know, things, water. That is a must. If you get stuck somewhere, you're going to need matches, possibly, to be able to keep yourself warm to start a fire if you are in a situation where you're not in the city. People need to realize this, and it's always better to be safe than sorry. We don't want any of our people harmed or hurt, and we want them to be prepared. And we'll have to go into that a different time on helping people. Think about what they really need to always have it in your vehicle. You know, you always keep a spare tire for what? Not because you expect to have a flat, but just in case you have a flat, you've got something in order to fix it. So it's not because you expect something to happen. It's because if something does happen, then you have the ability to protect yourself and your family. And also in WJBC, has been reporting out of Chicago that the first snowfall to hit Illinois this fall was no polite dusting, but it was a record-breaking event. It says Sunday's 6.4 inches of snowfall at O'Hare blew past the old Chicago record of 4.8 inches in November of 1940. That global warming is just heating up the day for everybody, I'm just telling you. So if you notice, the funny part of that was years ago when it stopped the quote-unquote warming, they took and they changed it to climate change. Well, the climate has always changed from the beginning of the Earth. So what we'll do is we'll be right back with you after a word from our sponsors. Please hang in with us. We have a lot of interesting topics to cover and a short time to do it in.
Of the not so free. ops. Photo ops.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.